Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee, and I'm glad you joined us this morning. You know, in the time that I spent at the Institute, I learned about many, many, many different challenges that people have to overcome. The obvious ones, such as cancer and various blood diseases, lots of stuff that unless it's been in your family or unless you've known somebody that's been stricken with some of these things, you go through life without knowing about a lot of them. Cancer, of course, gets a lot of media coverage, and everybody is very well aware of all the years that our Western medicine and science and all the powers that be in that arena have fought to find a cure for cancer. But during my tenure at the Institute, I learned about fibromyalgia, and I never had heard of it. And I was like, it seemed to be the catchphrase. If somebody came to us and just was miserable and had had all kinds of panels done and workups done and blood tests and everything, and they still were in chronic pain, often body aches and pains, and many times they would be people that looked great. I mean, you know, they wouldn't be overweight, they wouldn't be underweight, they wouldn't have a strange pallor to their skin. They would look perfectly healthy. So in the beginning, I questioned the validity of this particular problem, fibromyalgia. And again, it became, in my world at any rate, with all the people that came through the doors of the Institute, it seemed to be the affliction of the decade, you might say. Because if somebody couldn't figure out what was wrong with them, it was usually chalked up to fibromyalgia. So in the beginning, of course, I'm not a scientist, nor am I a doctor, nor have I had any training to be any of the above. It just seemed kind of, I don't know, it was out there for me. But through the years, I met some people who were almost, 85% disabled from things like fibromyalgia. And as the years progressed, I got the things that Shelley and I talk about on the air all the time, the fact that we're electric, the fact that there's a continuum in our body from our brains to our limbs to our heart to our organs. Everything is a machine. So then I started Googling fibromyalgia and looking up different things. And I came to the realization that even though I think a lot of times fibromyalgia is the answer, it's not a complete answer. And I also learned that things like fibromyalgia and another catchphrase 20 years ago was asthma. Every little kid that came down with a cold or a chronic cough was diagnosed with asthma. And I questioned that as well, because this was the era of my grandchildren, and I was like, my kids would catch cold. None of them were ever diagnosed with asthma. Allergies, yes. Chronic respiratory stuff, but asthma was not the diagnosis until, I want to say, the late 80s, early 90s, it seemed like, and they would hospitalize babies for days at a time to gain control of things like asthma, put them on respiratory machines. Kids started taking all kinds of breathing aerosols and things like that. So it's been, you know, it's been interesting to see how this kind of plays out. Also, the other thing was that you would be told on a regular basis that, you know, if you made it through those beginning years when your child was diagnosed with asthma, that they would more than likely grow out of it. Well, fibromyalgia is a little bit different because I think fibromyalgia starts and you kind of grow into it. It's kind of a, it's a chronic problem that seems to have major manifestations in your body. So I brought up a couple articles today, but first I'm going to bring in Shelley so that we can talk a little bit about this because she'll have some really good input for this. But it's a lot of times, again, fibromyalgia and the manifestations or repercussions from something like fibromyalgia can be so helped by your diet and your lifestyle. Good morning, Shel.
Well, good morning, Rainey. How are you?
I'm good, honey. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Still working on the tree, believe it or not. I go out every day for about an hour and try to move more of it.
Oh, my gosh. I hope you've got gloves and stuff.
Yeah, I do. I just don't have the right kind of tools. So it's like, you know, I'm just using little hand tools, a little rotary saw and a little reciprocal saw, but I don't have the right kind of blade. So, but I'm getting it. Yesterday I took the big trunk because it's like parallel to my front yard. You know, it fell forward, but it's still attached a little bit to the ground. So the piece of the trunk that's left, it's probably about 20 feet long. I mean, it's huge. And maybe about 14 inches in diameter at the small end and then about a foot and a half at the trunk end. So what I did yesterday is I was just kind of like moving it back and forth and I cracked it in half. Still haven't disconnected it, but I cracked it enough to move it away from the driveway now. So it's like I'm getting a workout though, so I don't mind it so much. It feels good.
Do you have a rope or a chain?
Not really, no. I don't have stuff like that. But, no,
well,
this is good exercise.
Well, I know, good exercise, but you could also hurt yourself. You could always tie something around it and move it with your vehicle.
I don't even want to take that chance.
Okay.
So, okay. I thought of that, too. My sister had suggested that. I was like, nope, I'm not tying anything to the back of my car. I've seen those things go bad. I'm not even taking a chance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, I have a pickup truck here and a chain. So if you change your mind, let me know and I'll come over. And that would probably be a real video opportunity, you and I doing this with the pickup truck. But, you know,
my nephew has a
chain. I'm opening up that door. Hmm?
Yeah, I think my nephew has a chainsaw. I think you have a chainsaw, too. So I have that in the back of my mind. But in the meantime, I'm trying to keep things going this way because I'm enjoying the physical exertion. But one of the things I wanted to say, which you kind of mentioned it, is that what a lot of people don't understand is that fibromyalgia is not a disease. It's a syndrome. And I was actually glad to see, I went on WebMD, I was actually glad to see that that's how they describe it there, because a lot of people think that fibromyalgia is a disease. And what I mean by a syndrome, it's a collection of symptoms rather than a specific disease. And it's generally caused by other conditions. So people need to understand about fibromyalgia. Fibromyalgia is basically a collection of symptoms that are really being caused by something else. It's not the thing. It's not the thing that's causing your pain. Fibromyalgia is a term used to say, okay, this person is having widespread pain, severe fatigue, tender points in the body. You know, when you have areas in the body that hurt just to the touch, or you have severe anxiety and depression linked with all these physical symptoms, that they use fibromyalgia to describe that. But it's very important for people to understand that fibromyalgia is not a disease or a condition. It's a syndrome that describes a collection of symptoms that always have other sources. So the only pharmaceutical treatments for fibromyalgia are really just painkillers and antidepressants, things to help with the pain. The unfortunate thing with that approach is that you're not going to what's causing the fibromyalgia. You're not going to what's causing the pain. And in most cases, and we'll get into this in a few minutes, I know you want to read the articles, but in most cases, what causes the pain is internal inflammation. And there are a lot of lifestyle things that can be done to reduce that and reduce the pain. I had fibromyalgia for almost a decade and chronic fatigue. And chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia are kind of like crossover. Chronic fatigue is generally a viral complex, though, so there is an underlying causality to the pain and the fatigue and all that. Chronic fatigue is generally associated with viral infections, and I had three at one time. But fibromyalgia was also the spinoff from the chronic fatigue, and it has the same series of symptoms, the widespread pain, the severe fatigue waves, and some emotional depression or just feeling like you can't get involved with your day. So those are some of the common symptoms between fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue, which is interesting. And I had been diagnosed with both.
Mm-hmm. Well, and chronic fatigue we've talked about on several occasions. The inability to stay awake or feel like you can stay awake. A lot of times you can stay awake, you just feel like you can't. Has to do with in a lot of cases, things like depression and problems like that as well. But you do see a big link to everything you just mentioned when you talk about fibromyalgia. And like I said, back in like, I want to say 2003, 2004, we had a major onslaught at the Institute in regard to fibromyalgia. And I even remember one day in a meeting with staff making a statement that caused me a few problems later. But I said, what's the deal here? Everybody that can't find anything else wrong with them, they have fibromyalgia. And, of course, I offended people. I didn't mean it to offend people. I just meant it that, as usual, our medical arena found a name for a myriad of challenges in somebody and gave it a name. And for some people, that's not always a good thing. It just isn't. If you can narrow down some of the problems with fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue, things like that, like you just said and like I said before, a lot of it has to do with your lifestyle and
one of the bad things,
your mental health.
Right. You just made a very good point. You said that, you know, like it's, you know, as soon as the medical establishment gives a name to something, it can have a negative effect on people because now people walk around and saying, oh, my God, I have fibromyalgia. Oh, my God, I have fibromyalgia. And it's like they own it. And no, you don't have fibromyalgia. All that means is that you have a lot of pain. Fibromyalgia isn't a thing. It's a description of the fact that somebody has widespread pain. Fibromyalgia is not a disease. And I think that's one of the things, if the doctor doesn't take time to explain to the individual what they're saying, all fibromyalgia is saying, like you have brown eyes and brown hair. It's a descriptor. Fibromyalgia is a term used to say this person is having a lot of widespread pain and severe fatigue, but it's not a disease. It's caused by something else, and you need to look at your lifestyle. You need to look at what you're exposed to. Are you under too much stress? Are you not sleeping? Are you eating foods that are causing inflammation in your body? Have you had a recent accident where maybe you have inflammation because your body didn't heal right and now you're having muscle spasms from it? This is what fibromyalgia is, and this is how you learn how to treat it, by going to the root of where the pain is coming from. But fibromyalgia is not a disease and is not causing your pain.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the major complaint that I used to listen to all the time, you don't understand. I feel like I've had the flu for a year.
Yep.
That's what people would say to me. I feel like I've had the worst flu I've ever had for a whole year. Yep. I'm continually aching. Sometimes there's places on my body that if I, like, reach with my hand to rub it, even the pressure from my own hand is almost unbearable. Lethargy. inability to focus. All mm-hmm. these kind of things go with these kind of diagnosis. So that's my point, is when you when they put a name, such an all-encompassing challenge like fibromyalgia, you don't even know what the hell to attack first. You don't even mm-hmm. know, you know, you don't even know, what do I address first, the fact that I can't stay awake, the fact that I can't focus, the fact that I'm driving in my car and all of a sudden I'm like, what the hell am I doing here, why am I here, where was I going? Those kind of things are the kind of complaints that people used to give to me, and I'd be like, how can this be one thing? How can
right.
this have a name when it's like so, I don't know, so variable and such? Plus that, one of the drugs that they want to give you for fibromyalgia is Lyrica. And Lyrica is like, it's like an antidepressant almost. I want to read, before we read about fibromyalgia, I just want to open everybody's eyes, because a lot of times I wonder if they listen to the disclaimers. And we've laughed about this on the show on several occasions, you know. Lyrica is not for everyone. And it always is with butterflies. Remember, isn't Lyrica the one, or one of them, is always beautiful?
Lunesta is
the one
with the butterflies.
Oh, okay. Always makes you feel like it's safe and comforting, right?
Yeah, but all those commercials, they have people walking on the beach or dancing and being romantic, and they always throw things in slow motion. I mean, very, very good. Our people.
Yes. Well, the power of suggestion and advertisement. So listen to this disclaimer. This came up on almost every page that I opened for fibromyalgia. Important safety information and indications. Lyrica is not for everyone. Lyrica may cause serious, even life-threatening allergic reactions. Stop taking Lyrica and call your doctor right away if you have any signs of a serious allergic reaction. Some signs are swelling of your face, your mouth, your lips, your gums, your tongue, your throat, your neck, and you may even have trouble breathing, or you may get a rash or have hives or get blisters. Drugs used to treat seizures increase the risk of suicidal thoughts or behavior. Lyrica may cause suicidal thoughts or actions in a very small number of people, one in about 500. That's a lot of people when you realize how many people there are in the world, by the way.
And you have millions of people taking the drug.
Exactly. Patients, family members, or caregivers should call the doctor right away if they notice suicidal thoughts or actions, thoughts of self-harm, or unusual changes in mood or behavior. These changes may include new or worsening depression, anxiety, restlessness, trouble sleeping, panic attacks, anger, irritability, agitation, aggression, dangerous impulses, or violence, or extreme increases in activity or taking. If you have suicidal thoughts or actions, do not stop Lyrica without first talking to your doctor. Are you serious?
Wow.
So it may cause swelling in your hands and your feet. I mean, it just goes on and on. It, like, blows me away. And then I think to myself, first of all, take a guess. I mean, we won't be able to prove this or disprove this. But how many people do you think read these disclaimers, Shel? Say we have 100 people that are going to be put on Lyrica today. How many of them are going to read everything that it says on the bottle or with the instructions that the pharmacist gives you?
Well, when I was younger, for that, 20-year period that I was on pharmaceuticals, I never read the disclaimers. And when TVs came on the when commercials would come on the TV, I never listened to the disclaimers. I toned them out. It's like now I listen to them after I've done all the research. But so I'm thinking that people today are more like I was when I was in my 20s and 30s, is that I would just see the commercials for how they intend them to be seen. The pretty scenery, the, you know, the people living their lives to the fullest, you know, and you always hear the guy at the end, after he gives all the disclaimers, he says, so call your doctor today and see if Lyrica can improve your life. So they always end it on a positive note, and you think the disclaimers are like one in a million or one in 10,000 or 100,000 or something, and that it's so rare that they just have to say it, but it doesn't affect you. That's what I used to think. And then you find out that these, in order for these symptoms to be recorded, it means it happens to happen to a lot of people, or they wouldn't have to mention it. And it's not so rare, and it happens to the like a vast number of people that take that drug. But before I stopped taking medications, I never listened to the disclaimers because I thought that they were so rare that it would never affect me.
Right, and you thought that it was just something that they had to do because it's the nature of the game, you know, that they have to protect themselves. And the old adage, you know, they're just covering their own butt, and they have to tell you that. I mean, you know. So
I remember one, just to make a quick comment, and then we'll continue with this. I had taken one drug called Depo-Provera, and literally within a few months, I started having very severe side effects. I mean, it was actually worse than the condition I was taking the Depo-Provera for. And I started having chest pains, heart cramps. I started losing muscle strength. Now, you know how strong I am. I mean, I was having a hard time picking a 5-pound bag of sugar or something like that. I mean, I was becoming very weak, and I was losing all my muscle tone. This happened inside of 3 months. I mentioned it to my doctor, and he says, well, that has nothing to do with the Depo-Provera, you know, whatever. So in this particular case, I happened to have had the sheet from the prescription bottle because I had to pick up the prescription and bring it to my doctor's office. He didn't keep it on hand. So I still had the box with the paperwork in it. I read it. 3 of the symptoms I told them were in the top 5 recorded side effects from this drug, and my doctor didn't know it. Think about that.
Yeah, I know. Well, and here's another thing that I think everybody needs to be aware of if you're not aware of it already. A lot of times when you're sitting in a very, very large doctor's office where you see that everybody's treated like cattle and it's in and out, nobody remembers your name, nobody remembers your face. The doctor walks in with the computer stuck up his nose and reads everything about you as quickly as he can. Sometimes you sit there for 15 minutes while he reads all about you and then turns around and says, so how are you today? And they do not address any of the side effects. Like if you come in, he's put you on a drug, you come in and you say, you know, all of a sudden I'm sad, unbelievably sad. Oh, well, that happens, you're sick. I mean, I've listened to these answers, you know what I'm saying? So he doesn't really even know.
Yeah.
And he has somebody in his office that talks with the salespeople from the pharmaceutical companies, and they give freebies. So a lot of times somebody gets in the door from a pharmaceutical company that's handed out like 100 samples for the nurse or the doctor to hand out to their patients and say, see if this works, with no disclaimers with it, very few directions on the samples. I mean, this has happened to Spike in the last 3 years, so I know that this is true. So, again, you're opening up that door to all the disclaimers that I just read to everybody, because those disclaimers are almost on everything if you get the full workup from the pharmacy when you fill a prescription.
And did you know that Lyrica is a nerve pain and epilepsy drug? Why would you give that to somebody who is having widespread pain if the pain's not from nerve damage or epilepsy? That's the problem.
Well, because let me read some of this stuff, and then it will give us some more fodder for this discussion. What is fibromyalgia? Fibromyalgia is thought to be the result of overactive nerves. It is a condition that results in chronic, widespread pain and tenderness all over. Here's exactly what that means. Chronic means that the pain lasts a long time, at least 3 months. Many people experience fibromyalgia pain for years before being diagnosed. Widespread means that it's all over the body. However, many people with fibromyalgia feel pain in the same places, such as the lower back and the neck. Tenderness means that even a small amount of pressure can cause a lot of pain. Fibromyalgia is one of the most common chronic pain conditions. It affects more than 5 million people in the United States. That's nearly one in every 60 Americans. Mostly women have it, but so can men. Most people begin feeling the symptoms of fibromyalgia when they are middle-aged, but symptoms can start before then. Fibromyalgia is not a psychological condition. While the exact cause is still not known, it is believed to have a biological cause. Recent research suggests that changes in the central nervous system, brain, spinal cord, and nerves, may be responsible. It is believed that there are a number of factors working together. Trauma, physical and emotional trauma have been linked to fibromyalgia. Family history, the genes you inherited from your parents may increase the likelihood of developing fibromyalgia. Infections, there is some evidence to suggest that certain illnesses can act as a trigger. Autoimmune diseases, people with disorders such as rheumatoid arthritis are likely to develop fibromyalgia. In recent years, there has been progress in the diagnosis and treatment of fibromyalgia, but there are still many aspects of fibromyalgia that are not understood. Because of the complexity of the condition, it can be difficult to diagnose. So you see, everything that you just shared with us in regard to all the stuff that you looked, like on WebMD and things like that, you see that there's similarity, but it's not, factually speaking, it's not the same, is it?
No, it's not.
Mm-hmm. So imagine that you're this person. Imagine you're you 25 years ago without all the knowledge that you've incorporated into who Shelley is after the last 25 years. And you would have been 30 years old, right? Which could have been the starting time, could have been, when you and Charlie split up, anything like that, some kind of trauma in your life, you could have started experiencing some of these symptoms. So when you researched, you find all these different things. And here's what I'm thinking, Shel. They make the problem fit the drug.
That's right. That's a very good way of putting it.
Yep, they make the issues. Who can't say that? Who can't say that there are some days that they wake up when everything doesn't hurt? I'm 65 years old. If I sit for too long in my recliner, I stand up and you'd swear to God I was 93. But once I get everything going again, I'm fine.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well, I have a condition called osteoarthritis. Which means
right.
that I'm sitting for any length, just what you described, when I'm sitting for any length of time and I go to stand up, until my ligaments and muscles get warm, which takes about maybe 5 or 6 steps, I can't straighten all the way up. I can't make my body go straight. It hurts. But as soon as I've taken, like a half a dozen steps and everything gets warmed up just from the action of moving, then I'm fine. The pain goes away. So I don't react to it. I know what the condition is. If I stretch and things like that, I can help with improvement with it. So the more active I am, it actually helps to stay that off, and then I'll actually see an improvement over a couple of days. Like a perfect example is what I'm going through with working on the tree every day. I've noticed that my mobility has improved. Even though I'm kind of achy from the excessive exercise, it's actually helping that other condition. And osteoarthritis benefits from motion, from being in motion. It's one of the things I read about fibromyalgia that they said staying active actually helps the disorder. Now, the reason that impressed me is because the reason being active, swimming, walking, they didn't say, like, go out and go into a gym and start doing weightlifting. They're talking about keeping the body moving, all right? They're saying things like and walking. These are extremely beneficial for fibromyalgia, and the reason is that any inflammatory disorder – is going to benefit from these type of activities because what's happening is you're moving toxins out of the body. When you're physically active, you are now circulating the blood more, you're oxygenating the blood, you're oxygenating joints and things like that, and in this process, you're also helping the body to detox. When the body's moving, things are working better, working more efficiently. Mm-hmm. And the more
you're releasing what your body offers to keep your body fluid.
Right.
Absolutely.
When you're sedentary, those toxins actually cause inflammation in the body.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're moving and you're freeing this up and your body's working more efficiently and doing housekeeping, the inflammation goes down, the pain goes down.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't make
well,
it the article, but I know why it's happening. So being
right,
physically
right. Well, because those explanations don't sell anything except your
right.
own personal strength and ability to get up and make the changes. They don't sell anything. I want to read this real quick, the role of nerves, because, I think everybody gets this, but I also want to mention, we talk a lot about us being electric. And we talk about one day when we were talking about electricity, the flow of electricity, and we talked about a kink. Or say you have a, this happened here. I think when we talked about this, this had just happened here and I talked about it. Somebody moved the big couch out here and had it over the wire to the lamp. And I don't know how long it sat like that. Usually I move furniture every other week to vacuum under it, even the big furniture, things like that. But so it must have sat on it for at least, let's say, 10 days. And all of a sudden, the light started flickering. I thought it was the bulb, changed the bulb, kept flickering. I do a little bit more investigation and see that the couch is sitting on the cord that plugs into the wall. So I took it out from underneath there, and the couch was a really heavy, that my big brown couch, that sits in the living room. And once I took it out from underneath the couch, the connectivity was fine, and it didn't break the cord. It didn't sever it or anything. Just by being pinched, it stopped the flow of electricity.
Wow.
And if you do that Christmas lights, if you have string after string after string of Christmas lights, and it says, now it will say on a box of Christmas lights, you can have up to 6 sets of these lights for connectivity. So that means that once the flow of electricity starts, it will only go through each plug area 6 times, and then it stops flowing. Then you get no more electricity because it's reached the end of its line. Here's what they say about the role of nerves in our bodies. Connected to the muscles are nerves. Nerves throughout the body and spinal cord send messages to the brain. It is believed that people with fibromyalgia have overactive nerves. This may be responsible for the chronic all-over pain and tenderness of fibromyalgia. Now, let me ask you something. Do you believe that some of us have overactive nerves and some of us don't?
No. I've heard that so many commercials, and it's the most nonsense.
Oh, gosh. But, it sounds
overactive.
Good. It sounds good, doesn't it?
Maybe overstimulated might be a better way of putting it. There's no such thing as having an overactive nerve. What it is you have overstimulated nerves, and what's stimulating it? What's stimulating the nerve to sense pain? That's the cause of it, and that's usually inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no such
thing
as active nerves. That's just nonsense.
Exactly. Because they're all active. Otherwise, you'd be dead.
Mm-hmm.
If all your nerves are not active, not working in conjunction with your body and letting you know that you've just lit a match and burnt your finger, right, all of those kind of things work all the time, and there's not some that are more active than others. Now let me say this. I met a young lady recently who was kicked by a horse in her, in the tibia part of her leg. And it caused some nerve damage. So now they did surgery on her when she got hurt. She wore a cast for a long time. The tibia was broken, and they repaired it and everything. Now, though, in her foot and in her ankle, she has no sensation because those nerves either got severed or now they discontinued their line down your foot. I don't know. They can't tell her. But recently, they're all having a picnic, and she's walking around with the little skinny flips that all the girls wear, the little patent leather things that you might as well be barefooted in. And she broke her ankle and didn't even
know
until the ankle swelled up so bad that she couldn't lift out of bed, right?
Oh, my God, wow.
Yeah, and this is all because of this original injury, because now she has no real messenger in her foot to send it to her brain all the way up those nerves and say, oh, my God, you just stepped on me wrong. I think you broke me.
Right. Well, so when you're talking about, like, overactive nerves, like I said, that's such a misnomer. It could be oversensitive nerves, or it could be, like what I was saying a few minutes ago. But, like you're sitting the wrong way and your leg falls asleep, and you go to stand on it, and then as the nerves, as you take the pressure off the nerves, because you just pinched a nerve now, so now that area of the body wasn't getting any electrical impulse. Now all of a sudden you move, you take the pressure off that bundle of nerves, and now everything is flowing again. What happens? You get all that pins and needles sensation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of like what overactive nerves is, because now all of a sudden they're excited. They're being overly impacted until the circulation all turns to normal, and then everything gets fine again, you know? But think about the mechanism that happened. You had an area where you cut off the circulation or you pinched the nerves, and then when you free it up, initially it's more uncomfortable until it levels off and you get everything flowing properly again, you know? It's like that time when I injured my hand. I had gotten bitten by a dog, and the tooth went through my palm, and my hand just swelled up huge for about 6 weeks, all right? And that was a puncture wound, so it wasn't a gaping wound. After about 1 week, now the tooth went through what's called a nerve bundle between my ring and pinky finger, like near my wrist. So that's one of the entry areas, and there's a nerve bundle there. Thank God it didn't break my bones. The tooth slid right between the bones there and severed the nerve bundle. So about 4 days later, I called the doctor. I was freaking out because I felt like there were worms in my hand. I mean, I felt like there were hundreds of things moving inside my hand, but it was a puncture wound, so it was closed. I didn't see any sign of infection. But I said, oh, my God, what happened? Did bacteria from the tooth get in there, and now I have a colony of worms in my hand? And the doctor cracked up laughing, and he says, no, no, no. He says, that's the best news. He says, that's what it feels like when the body starts regrowing the nerves. He says, it feels like worms. He says, that sensation will last about 4 or 5 days. He says, as soon as the nerve bundles have reconnected, that sensation will go away. He said, but no, he said, because he had seen the hand. He said, there's no sign of infection. He said, you don't have worms in your hand. He says, that's just the nerves growing back. And he was right. It took about 4 or 5 days, and the sensation was almost completely gone. But for about 3 days, it felt like there was something, there were live things inside my hand. It was the most weirdest sensation. I calmed down once I realized it wasn't bugs, but it was that intense of a sensation that I actually felt like there were hundreds of little living things inside my hand.
Well, that's kind of gross, but I can see how that could happen. You know what somebody showed me on Facebook last night? This is disgusting, too, and I had nightmares about it. They had 4 sets of frog legs, and each set of frog legs was joined at the butt of a frog. But the torso, the head, and the front legs on the frog were gone. So, and skinned. But you could see the toes, the feet of the frog, the calf of its leg, the thigh of its leg, and then its buttocks. And they're skinned and everything. They laid it on a plate and put salt on it. And as they sprinkled it with salt, the frog legs started jumping and quivering. It was gross, Shelley. Gross.
I mean,
gross,
these were
gross.
Dead frogs?
Dead, yeah. I mean, they had to be dead. All that was there were the legs, all skinned and everything.
Oh, you said the front of the body was gone.
Yeah, everything.
Okay,
I mean, they were preparing them to cook frog's legs, you know, deep-fried frog's legs, like a lot of people eat, especially in New Orleans and places like that. They're like a delicacy. And,
well, salt is conductor, right?
I guess so. But how can you conduct something that's dead?
Wow.
But this is what happened. It was really weird. And my husband said, he said, yeah, they showed us that in school. I said, they did? I said, I'm going to have to understand it a little bit more, because it was gross, first of all, like I said. I mean, the little twitching of the toes of the frog's foot and everything, quivering all the way up and down the muscles, it was disgusting. But it made me wonder more and more. Well, and that's like snakes. Snakes can keep doing that. The continuum of their nerves, they can keep writhing and wiggling and everything after they're dead.
Yeah, well, what about chickens? You chop the head off and the body runs around for
and they run around. Yeah, it's kind of so. Maybe the memory. Maybe it has something to do with the memory of the nerve itself. I mean, that's way too deep for me. I'm not smart enough to get all that. But there has to be something to do with the memory of the nerve. Anyway, I brought up this other page that I wanted to share with everybody in case we have people out there that are struggling with these kind of symptoms. And it is interesting to see the different things that they brought myself to the wrong page. It is interesting to see the different things that they can do to help. There is the National Fibromyalgia and Chronic Pain Association. It's NFCPA, and it has it's a coalition that gets volunteers and stuff like that to help find information. There's the American College of Rheumatology, which has a link to the fibromyalgia. But then there's an organization called CPRA. It's Chronic Pain Research Alliance. It says, formerly the Overlapping Conditions Alliance is dedicated to alleviating the significant human suffering caused by prevalent, neglected, and poorly understood chronic pain conditions that frequently co-occur and disproportionately affect women. By advocating for and supporting innovative, collaborative scientific research on these disorders. These conditions include vulvodynia, I can't even pronounce some of these, endometriosis, intestinal cystitis, painful bladder syndrome, irritable bowel syndrome, chronic headaches, and chronic fatigue syndromes. And the Endometriosis Association, the TMJ, which is your jaw thing, Chronic Fatigue and Immune Dysfunction Association, all got together. And this one organization is mostly for women, but men have used it as well. But again, Chronic Pain Research Alliance, CPRA.
Wow.
And they've been around since 2010, and they don't, you know, part of this is about discrimination. Part of this is about the rights of women. Because so many times, I mean, let's face it, how many times as a woman, I can't remember, I think it was The Closer I watched one day, and all the detectives in the office were saying, it must be that time of month for Kira Sedgwick, you know, the boss on The Closer.
Yeah.
And she heard somebody say it, and she went nuts on everybody, and they said, yeah, that's what's wrong, because she went nuts, right? And there is some major discrimination about us because we have a goddamn period, you know. I mean, I'm like, what are you thinking? Please. So these organizations, I think, are beneficial to the women that are involved and have these kind of things. But I do want to say that we, you and I, Monica, we've had other people on the show that have talked at length about what you can do to stop any kind of chronic fatigue, chronic pain. If not stop it, at least be driving your own vehicle and take some charge of it. And let's really quickly touch on some of the things that we know can help these. If you're not drinking enough water, you're going to have chronic pain.
Right.
I mean, you know, that's the first simplest one to mention. If you're not drinking enough water, you're going to have chronic pain. If you're eating too much sugar, too much acidic food, too much things that don't sit well with you, if you have, if you don't have regular bowel movements, this will also, you know, your body's reaction is going to be pain and lethargy.
And it's important to understand things like caffeine and alcohol cause dehydration in the body. So if you do partake of caffeine, like if you have coffee every day or if you drink every day, then it's even more important for you to also drink more water because mm-hmm. you have to counterbalance that the dehydration that you're causing in your own body by your food choices.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And moderate exercise. If something's going on with you, if you are indeed in so much pain, may I say to you that swimming, weightless exercise, is one of the most beneficial things anybody can do for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very overweight. I walk a lot. I always feel better after I walk a lot. But if I go in the pool, I mean, I do flips in the pool. I do somersaults in the pool. There's no way in hell I'm doing that out here on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Swim underwater. I stand on my hands. I do all that kind of stuff because I cannot do that stuff on land.
Mm-hmm.
It's great for you, and it makes you weightless. It also lubricates everything, like Shelley said before. Every time you move, every time you stretch, you create what our body naturally supplies for us to keep us fluid, keep us mobile.
Well, one of the main things about exercise to keep in mind is that not only are you warming the joints, you're bringing circulation to the joints, you're improving circulation, you're improving electrical connectivity, talking about the nerves, but also when you exercise, the brain releases hormones that uplift your mood. I don't think people understand that. So exercising is beneficial in so many ways. It clears toxins, it improves circulation, and it releases hormones that can actually uplift your moods. So even moderate exercise, swimming, yoga are two of the best. Yoga is extremely beneficial because not only does it relax the body, but it relaxes the body while it's strengthening it. Stretching exercises and walking, those are probably the four main exercises. You don't have to join a gym. These are things you can do in the comfort of your own home. Walking, swimming, yoga, and stretching. And those four exercises, even if you do 10 minutes a day, can really, really change things for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's all of those things are the truth. And again, if you're struggling, if you do have, if you're over the age of 50, and you're carrying extra weight, and you got other things going on, again, a pool, a body of water. I have an ex-brother-in-law who I've known since we were like 8 years old, and he contracted rheumatoid arthritis when he was in his 30s. And he moved to Florida. He had already tried gold shots. He was taking everything that any doctor in the town where they all grew up could offer him. The gold shots were like extremely expensive, and there was the school of thought back in those days, that was in the 80s, that if you took the gold shots, it would help lubricate and create some kind of a bond in your joints and everything so that the rheumatoid arthritis wouldn't cripple your bones. By the time he got to Florida, he was already bent in his ankles, bent in his knees, his elbows, his wrists were already bent, already showed signs of crippling arthritis. He is now a golf pro, by the way.
Wow.
And this is going to make a lot of our vegans out there giggle. He started eating cans of green beans and spinach and peas We all know peas aren't a green vegetable, but he didn't care. They were colored green, so he only ate green vegetables in a can. Nothing fresh, nothing anything. And every day he went to the ocean.
Wow.
And he's still bent in his ankles. He's still bent in his knees. That didn't repair itself. But he's a golf pro. And he's completely mobile. He and I are the same age. And he still works as a golf pro. He's 65. And the ocean and the giving up all the other, and he's a heavy drinker, by the way. And through his lifetime, he's quit drinking on many occasions, but he doesn't stay clean and sober. But he still does the exercise. He still goes in the water every day. So the benefits are everlasting and very, very valuable. So I think sometimes we have to pick and choose because you're right. Sometimes we can't do some of the things that we know are best for us. I think we've all learned that. Go ahead, honey.
Well, on the WebMD site, if I can just read this, they have a list of the 9 things you can do to avoid fibromyalgia pain. If I can just read this real quick.
Sure.
Okay. The first, it's actually a little slideshow. So if you go to WebMD, you can actually Google 9 things you can do to avoid fibromyalgia pain and fatigue. That's what they call it. It's a little slideshow. So the first thing they said is listen to your body. And don't put too much stress on yourself. If there's a day that you're really not feeling up to doing certain things, respond accordingly to your body. And that's good advice, not allowing yourself to put yourself under too much undue stress. If you're working a job, if you have family obligations, do what you can. But if there's something that you can't do because you're in too much pain or too much fatigue, listen to your body. And if you have to say to a family member, I have to leave early or come in late or whatever, do it until you're feeling better, until you've gotten a handle on your physical condition. The second thing is the exercise that we were just doing, okay? Walking, swimming, yoga, and stretching. They actually talk about those 4, and I agree wholeheartedly with that. The third thing is massage. They actually highly recommend massage therapy for people with any kind of fibromyalgia. And we know that any kind of inflammatory condition absolutely benefits from massage because, again, you're moving the lymph glands, you're getting toxins out of the body, it can help to loosen tight joints and stuff like that, and once you take the pressure off the muscles, the pain alleviates. So that's the third thing is massage therapy. The fourth thing is using heat and cold therapy. Again, this is something everybody knows about. So if you use hot therapy on stiff muscles or cold therapy, now the reason cold would be helpful is especially if you're talking about an inflammatory condition. Cold compresses can actually reduce the inflammation. So using hot and cold therapy, very, very beneficial in those areas on your joints and in particular muscles to help alleviate that. The fifth thing is acupuncture. Now, they actually put a disclaimer here saying that some people believe that acupuncture doesn't really have any benefit, that the person has to check with their own doctor and see. But the fact that they even put acupuncture here, I was actually pretty impressed, because that is considered alternative medicine, but it is one of the things they talked about. And acupressure is the same philosophy as acupuncture, but they don't use needles. They manipulate you with their fingers on acupressure points. Very, very helpful for pain management. And then monitoring your sleep, making sure you're getting a good night's sleep, having a relaxing nighttime routine, making sure you're not eating something that's got sugar in it or caffeine near your bedtime, maybe taking a relaxing bath before you go to bed, not having the TV on or having a computer. Don't lay down and have your laptop in your lap and working on the computer. This is exciting the nerves. When you're talking about overactive nerves, anything that gives off EMS is going to excite your nerves. Do not take a laptop into bed with you. All right, so these are some of the things they talk about is to making sure you have a restful sleep routine so you get a good night's sleep. The seventh thing is a sense of being overwhelmed. One of the things is stress management. Read books. Go see a therapist or something. Learn how to handle stress. because our response to stress, when we allow ourselves to get into that feeling of overwhelmment, can absolutely create inflammation and pain in the body. It releases negative hormones like cortisol and things like that, and can actually put pressure on, you know, can create inflammation, which puts pressures on nerves inside the body. So alleviate any stress you can, and if there's things, obligations you have you can't do away with, then learn how to deal with them better. And like I said, there's a lot of self-help books about how to deal with stress and how to be calmer internally. The eighth thing is supplements. They actually talk about supplements here, and again, they have a disclaimer on here saying that, you know, they don't know if they're really good. They don't think they're as effective as prescription medications, but you and I both know, and a lot of the people who try it have learned that supplements can actually be more beneficial, like turmeric. Turmeric is a natural painkiller.
Oh, yeah, amazing. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, you know, use things like that. Research different types of herbs that can be, or go to a Chinese herb doctor or something like that, and they can give you a protocol. But the supplements and herbs can be great for controlling pain. Bromelain, which is what I took for my shoulder, bromelain is a natural, it's from pineapple extract or whatever. It's a natural anti-inflammatory. It can help with joint pain. Arnica is something else. You can take them in pellet form, or you can use it topically as a cream. Arnica is another natural painkiller, and it's available topically and orally. And then the last thing is music, using things, meditation and music, to help to bring about a sense of peace in the body, a peace in the mind, and this also helps the nerves to become more relaxed, and once the nerves are relaxed, then you have a sensation of relief from pain.
Mm-hmm. Well, all of those things are, everybody has the opportunity, I mean, unless you are at a point in your life where you're bedridden or something like that, and of course I don't want to leave those people out. If there's somebody out there that's listening that's thinking to themselves, oh yeah, easy for you to say. Our thoughts are with you, and I hope that you can bring yourself to a place where eventually these things are possible for you. But the deal is you don't want to get there. So if you're out there and you're struggling with some pain and aches, and you know, there's nothing worse than depression, and there's nothing worse than feeling sorry for yourself. So I think a lot of times it's just a mindset, and we've all been there. It's not like anybody is immune to feeling sorry for themselves or going through a bout of depression or having anger issues. All of that stuff happens to all of us. But all of these things make you healthier from the inside out, the inside out. And that's what's really, really, really important. A clock will not run unless the inside of it is all geared together. You won't either. You won't either. You have to get your insides to a place where your outsides can function the way they need to. Tomorrow, we are going to have somebody who's very near and dear to my heart. His name is John, and for many years at the Institute, he would come over, and he would do exercise classes. He is a health coach. He is a very, very knowledgeable about different supplements and things like magnesium and potassium and all those kind of things. But the most important thing about him is he just celebrated his 80th birthday, and he still runs in races. He still participates in amazing things that show you the capabilities of the human body. He's had trouble in his lifetime because he's very short statured, so he had hip problems as a young man, but he overcame all of them just by his tenacity. I love him to death. So does Shelley. We have been blown away by him more times than I can tell you. He's also a musician and just an all-around really, really cool guy. He's going to be on our show tomorrow, and that's why I chose this topic today, so that we could talk about this and open up those doors for John to be able to address some of those things and some of the things that he's overcome just by doing everything we talked about today. So I look forward to having him on the show, and we probably won't be on Friday, everybody, but I will keep you posted. I may have to take son Michael to Miami very, very early Friday morning, so we may have to not do the recap show, but I will keep you posted in regard to that. In the meantime, everybody have an awesome day. It's kind of rainy here in South Florida, kind of drizzly outside the door, but go out and make it the best day you can. God bless, and thanks for being here with us. Thanks, Shell. Good input
today.
Thanks, Bean. Good input.
Yeah, great show. All right. Talk to everyone tomorrow. Have a wonderful day.
Bye-bye, everybody.